Back together again, you and I, on a Tuesday, October 18th, 2022 edition of Connecticut Today. We featured Republican State Rep. David Wilson on a recent bear attack in the town of Morris and a renewed discussion on whether the state should sanction bear hunting again and thin the population. State Treasurer candidate Republican Harry Arora joined us to talk about his vision for the office if he's elected in November. And I also had a few thoughts at the top of the program about how the abortion issue continues to play out both locally and nationally. What do we do about the state's slowly increasing black bear population? We had a 10-year-old kid playing in his grandfather's backyard in the town of Morris a few days ago apparently escaped what may have been a fatal attack by a bear thanks to his grandfather throwing something at the bear and a neighbor helping out. To talk about this, a state legislator from that area who obviously has heard about this over the past few years, Republican State Rep. David Wilson joins us. He represents parts of Bethlehem, Litchfield, Morris, Warren, and Woodbury. David, hi, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul.
Well, thank you for joining us today. David, appreciate you joining us. This kind of thing. Now, all the experts say, David, that I'm reading about say, well, this was, they think, kind of an unusual attack. It was a male, not a female. There may not have been a food issue here. However, David, from what I'm reading, from what you have said and some other legislators from that area, this is becoming an all too common occurrence in the thickly wooded areas of the state?
I believe so, Paul. And I mean, this has become a real public safety issue. Those of us who have advocated for trying to control the growth of the population of bears in Connecticut are at a I told you so point after this incident that happened the other day. The incident was totally unprovoked in any way. The family is very cognizant of the bears in their vicinity coming into their yard all the time. They have no bird feeders. They do not feed the bears. And this bear came out of a densely wooded area behind in their backyard and clearly was on the boy before anyone even saw it happening. So there was no warning, no chance. Paul, we have to remember that this is the time of year when the bears are trying to fatten themselves up so that they can go to sleep and take a break in the cold weather. So coincidentally, I happen to know this family. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it when I first heard the report, but I later learned who it was, and I called and spoke with both the grandmother and the grandfather. And it was a very terrifying experience for the whole family and the neighbor who came to their aid.
David, from what I'm reading now, there are specific legislative limits that have been put in place over the years as to what a family like this could do, even farmers in your district and other areas of the state, to protect themselves and perhaps livestock or from bodily harm. Talk about that reality. What can or can a person not do by the law?
Well, they certainly, under the law, are not allowed to shoot the bear. And in fact, there was legislation that said that they should do things like make noise and, you know, perhaps blow a whistle or bang pots and pans, you know, to try to distract the bear. So there's literally, under Connecticut law right now, nothing that a homeowner is allowed to do to protect their property, protect their family, protect their livestock. My phone, since this occurred, has been ringing off the wall. I have many constituents who raise chickens, who raise ducks, who raise rabbits, who have honeybees, and their hives are being destroyed by these beasts. Their chickens are being killed, their rabbits are being killed, and there is nothing allowed under the current law or legislation to allow them to protect themselves.
And I'm sure folks, for example, in Trumbull have encountered bears in wooded areas like many people in Connecticut have. And now people are kind of looking at that issue again, and maybe the General Assembly will have to act or do something here. After a 10-year-old boy was attacked in the town of Morris a few days ago, luckily fast-acting thinking by his grandfather and a neighbor scared the bear off, although he was slightly physically injured, but the mental scarring obviously will stay with this kid for the rest of his life. A legislator from there, State Rep David Wilson, is joining us here for a few more minutes to talk about that. David, I want to clarify something you said, and I have read the stuff that you did previously say about the limits people have. So if I'm in one of those areas, David, in your district or anywhere, and I'm in the backyard and or I'm in my kitchen and I look out and let's say I have a grandkid in the backyard or a family member, friend, whatever, a small kid, and I see a bear enter the yard, and the bear is getting close to but not directly in physical contact with my family member. I have a loaded shotgun and or an AR-15 style weapon with me in the kitchen for this particular purpose. Am I allowed to shoot that bear?
No, sir.
So a bear can be walking toward a child in my backyard, and I'm not allowed to shoot that bear?
You'll be taken away in handcuffs.
Mind-boggling. Why, David, I know this might be a loaded question, but what's up with that?
Well, Paul, I'm not sure I want to get into the whole political rhetoric about this situation. I'm more concerned, and let me just say that, Senator Minor and I have sponsored and co-sponsored legislation, as well as some of our colleagues have, for the 6 years that I've been in Hartford. And at this point, I'm feeling a little regretful that I've made the decision to retire at the end of this term, because this incident has certainly revived my passion for this concern. So until the legislature makes a decision on whether they're going to allow individuals to protect themselves from harm, we're going to be faced with this. Look, we were God blessed this week that bear did not grab the child by the head instead of by the legs. And I've had people try to tell me, oh, it was a mother protecting her cubs, which we categorically know is not true. The sex of the beast was male. There was nothing in the vicinity that would attract the bear. And it was in, I think, fairly agreed opinion that it was most likely the fact that the bear is out looking to eat whatever they can, because they're omnivorous, and they'll eat literally anything as they try to store up their fat for the winter. So to say that a bear is not aggressive, you don't know that until the moment that it occurs. We need to have a serious meeting and discussion with the governor and Commissioner Dykes, with the legislators that are closest to understanding this, to try to help DEEP make a determination on what they're going to put out for regulations in these kind of situations. They've been sitting on their hands for this for years. I'm not afraid to call it out. And I think that unfortunately this event maybe is going to get this situation the attention that it is due.
So, David, in your opinion, and I understand this might be just your opinion here, I know there are a lot of people who obviously, like you, are well steeped in this subject. What would be one answer here? Maybe on an initial step, allowing people to defend themselves, and then what do we do? Do we go to, say, a very limited, targeted sort of bear hunt under strict regulations, only with experienced hunters? What could we do here? Because I think you'll agree with me, we don't want to carpet bomb the bear population out of Connecticut. But again, it is increasing, is it not, since we eliminated bear hunting?
So my understanding from speaking with econ officials, most sows are having an average of 2.5 cubs a season. These beasts have no natural predators here in Connecticut, other than motor vehicles occasionally, you know, if they're hit on the road. And so the population is going to continue to increase. I think, again, with public safety in mind, we want to continue to have a discussion with DEEP and with the governor to try to figure out what is it that people are going to be allowed to do or not allowed to do to defend themselves and protect their families and their homes and their livestock.
State Rep. David Wilson. David, thank you. We appreciate the time. Take care. And even after you leave the General Assembly, if you're still passionate about this issue, you have my number. So don't ever hesitate to call if we can add to the discussion. David, thank you.
All right, Paul. Thank you so much for the opportunity. You
appreciate
have a good day.
It. Take care, David. State Rep. David Wilson, retiring from the General Assembly, did three terms serving the areas of Bethlehem, Litchfield, Morris, Warren, and Woodbury. How about that, folks? You look out of your kitchen or you look out of your deck, and it doesn't have to just be in the real hinterlands of Litchfield County. I mean, it's when I used to work at Quinnipiac up near Mount Carmel there, and the roads up there, we would see a bear cub every so often in the woods. So think about that. You are in your home. You're on your deck. You're in your kitchen, whatever. And under state law, David said, if you shot a bear that was heading toward a child or a somebody in your family, and the bear had not made contact yet, you're under arrest. Again, I don't think we have to carpet bomb the bear population here in the state. I'm not saying that. But again, this is when we listen to, this is my opinion now, this is not David. To me, it sounds like we're not listening to the right people here. And maybe, and I know, look, folks, I'm not trying to put words in people's mouths, but yeah, I know in Hartford, the way these things work, there are undoubtedly people at the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection who are saying, oh, God, if we allow a bear hunt, or allow farmers or families to defend themselves, all the environmentalists are going to be yelling and screaming at us. You know what I say? Let them yell and scream. What would we be talking about now if this kid was taken and mauled and devoured by that bear? I don't dislike bears. They're God's creation. I get that. What's more valuable to you, the life of a bear or the life of a human? I think we know with a functioning brain what that answer is. Joining us right now is a gentleman who has represented the town of Greenwich in the Connecticut General Assembly. He's a Republican state rep, but now he has his eyes on things a little higher. Republican state rep Harry Arora joins us. He is, of course, the Republican nominee for the state treasurer's race, which will be decided on Election Day in a few weeks. Hey, Harry, good afternoon. It's Paul here. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Paul. It's so nice to be with you.
Well,
thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. Harry, you got this nice job in the General Assembly representing one of Connecticut's great communities. why look higher? I mean, getting all in the muck in a statewide race? What's up with that?
Well, let's just say, you know, you have to do what you can to make the most impact. When I moved from a private sector role, which I did for nearly 25 years as an investment manager, my objective was to serve our community and to make the best impact and bring my best to the job. And having served as a financial investment manager in finance for 25 years, how better can you serve than be the treasurer of the state, where you can really save some money for your taxpayers and residents in the state?
So, Harry, let's break it down a little bit. I would say most people kind of probably know what the purvey of the state treasurer is. But before we get into your view of the job versus your Democratic opponent, Eric Russell, tell my listeners who may not be all that aware, what are the daily duties of the Connecticut state treasurer?
So the treasurer's office has, let's say, the three or four most the key roles, key things to do. Number one, manage all the cash which flows in and out. So once the tax, think about managing the checking account. Second, manage the debt. So we have outstanding debt of $30 billion. So every year you have to pay interest on it. Some of it has to be rolled out or refinanced. Hopefully you pay down, but we haven't been doing that. So that is the second job which the treasurer does, manage your finances in terms of your debt. And the third is manage your investments. Now, you may think, and your listeners may think, well, does the treasurer, what kind of investments does Connecticut have? Mm-hmm. Connecticut actually has $45 billion in investments for our pension fund, our pension assets. And these assets need to be invested in the markets to earn a market rate of return, a good rate of return. And that's the job of the treasurer. Now, every 1% point, the treasurer, the return varies, or variation of the return by 1% point is $450 million.
Wow.
$450 million. So that's a real big job.
Another segment with Harry Arora, well-known, very well-known state legislator from Fairfield County, Republican state rep from Greenwich, now the Republican nominee for the Connecticut treasurer's election. He will face off against the Democratic nominee, Eric Russell. Mr. Russell got through a three-way primary, and he will be on the Democratic line and the working families line as well. You know, Harry, some people might hear the description you gave and may be a treasurer themselves or know somebody and say, well, Harry, that's great. I agree with you. But what is the political aspect? In other words, how would Harry Arora handle things as a treasurer, as a Republican, versus, say, the previous treasurer, the Democrat, Mr. Wooden, or Eric Russell?
So this is the most important thing. This is less political and more about competence and experience.
Okay.
So we have had treasurers who have had who may be city planners or who may be attorneys, really, you know, good in their own business, but we haven't had people who have had experience in finance. As a result, the treasury really suffers. You know, we do not make enough returns on our investments,
mm-hmm.
and as I mentioned, it could be hundreds of millions of dollars. We pay too much interest. We do not return the money, unclaimed property, to our residents. So there is quite a degree of hardship our residents face, either in higher taxes, insecure pensions, or unclaimed property which doesn't get returned, because it is perceived to be political when it's really a job which requires experience, background, and competence.
So, Harry, do you see things, and I guess you just answered my question, but in a little more detail, do you see things that hit you right in the face with your years of finance and market-driven experience? Do you see things that this state has done and shake your head and say, no, we should be doing this and not that? Can you give me an example or two?
Oh, thank you for that question. Absolutely. So we have $45 billion in assets. Right. And there's a lot of discussion about, listen, you know, we have a pension fund problem. We have been earning 3% point less than an index fund, than an index would. You know, so you have most of your listeners would know stock and bond indices. So these days, Vanguard has popularized that. So in finance, we use this index as a benchmark, 80-20, 70-30, something like that, where 80% is in equities, 20% is in bonds. And our pension, which pays $150 to $200 million in fees every year, investment fees,
wow,
earns 3% less. And that's $1 billion less than you would do if you did nothing, sat with your feet on the table, and basically invested in an index. Why?
So was there
the question.
Has there been a fear, Harry, of saying, well, we want to do the safe thing. Yeah, we could maybe have a better return, lower cost, but there's no risk there. Is that it or not?
Well, Paul, this is the contrary. I wish you were that were the case. We are taking more risks. We're trying to be, because there's no leadership. If let's assume for a moment you basically had the legal counsel of the hospital start doing surgeries for you. They're a lawyer, really great thing. But you would not let them touch your body with a scalpel. They're legal. They're attorney. Same thing. We have had attorneys who've been related with finance really run financial strategy, investment strategy, and really they don't have, they have no experience. Where would they start? Right? And that's exactly, they have higher risk strategies, mm-hmm. which have poorer returns. And that's the reason I think it's very important for your listeners to know. This is less political and way more important to get somebody with experience, with qualification, with the expertise to be able to fix these things. And there's billions of dollars on the table. This is not, we're not talking about $10 million a year or $100,000. We're talking about large amounts of money, both in terms of the debt as well as in terms of investment, as well as efficiency of various programs which touches people on a day-to-day basis. And that's what I'm going to do, and I have a plan.
Finally, Harry, what are your thoughts of not just here in Connecticut, but all around the country where there is now a social aspect or a political or a social justice aspect to how funds are invested vis-a-vis tobacco, fossil fuels, gun manufacturers? What are your thoughts on that, and how would you handle that if you're elected treasurer?
Listen, the markets do a good job of even handicapping that. So it's not a good idea most times to invest in businesses which have high reputational risk. So we don't have to do anything else. If I allocate money to a fund manager, because we don't do direct stock picking at the treasurer's level, mm-hmm. and that's the right thing, right? What we have to tell them is that, listen, you have to take reputational risk. But we don't have to basically single out industries. We do not have to single out businesses or names. Let me give you an example.
Sure.
We have been on governance, which is very important. We were invested with Russia. Why? Why were we invested $200 million with Russia? Now, Russia has the most important ESG risk or governance risk, mm-hmm. because I don't think before the war, after the war, 2 years before or now, we all know that country is run not with good governance.
Yeah.
And maybe there are many, many other countries as well. So my point is this, that yes, there are things I'm going to do, especially with regard to making sure we are close to home so that there is less risk. But to your question, we are not going to single out industries. We're going to let managers decide where are returns and make sure that they do not invest with firms which are breaking the law, federal law or state law, or which are taking undue reputational risk.
Republican State Rep. Harry Arora, currently representing the town of Greenwich, but setting his sights higher on the treasurer's race, which, of course, you folks will decide, among other races, come Election Day. Harry, thank you. We will chat down the road, sir. Take care and have a good evening.
I look forward to being with you again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Harry. Appreciate it. Harry Arora there. Let me ask you something as we get underway here at 2:08 on a Tuesday here in Connecticut today. How are you, WICC? Let me ask you something seriously, and especially if you're a Democrat, if you're a Democrat-leaning independent, I'm not doing this for effect here. I'm not doing this for my own sanity. Let me ask you something serious here for just a minute. Can we be serious for just a moment here? Do the Democrats have any other issue but abortion? I'm dead serious here. I'm not doing this for effect or to be cutting edge or anything. It's an honest question. Do they not understand that the abortion issue is starting to get tired with voters? It is. And it's not just me saying it. It's poll after poll. It's major analysis after major analysis. I predicted a bunch of months ago that if you're going to do a run on abortion, if abortion is going to be issue number one here in Connecticut, which is idiotic, we're a blue state, it's already codified in our law, nothing is happening with abortion of any consequence in this state. Yet the Democratic Party, the power base in this state, the power base, the power brokers at the Capitol, and all the Democratic campaigns are trying to play boogeyman with this. And it's ridiculous. And you see what Democrats are trying to do with George Logan, even though George Logan and, for that matter, Bob Stefanowski and his running mate, Laura Devlin, right? they have said numerous times over and over and over and over again, they are not going to limit or end any choice in Connecticut. But when you have an opposition party that can't talk about anything else, that is drunk on the abortion issue, it's mind-numbing. For the love of God, can you talk about something else, or do you just not want to? Is that the whole thing? And now, it's so bad. I read this morning. It's so bad that you've got Democrats turning on their own, eating their own, cannibalizing their own in the General Assembly just so they can put out something misleading against a Republican who voted a certain way that at least 10 Democrats did on an abortion bill. It is utterly mind-numbing how vapid, how empty, how ridiculous this has all become, because abortion, which is a big decision, which is a decision not to be taken lightly, is being treated by the Democratic Party in this state and the National Democrats like junk food. It has become vapid. It's the only thing they have. They can't talk about the economy. They can't talk about inflation. They don't want to talk about crime. They don't want to talk about international relations. It's abortion and nothing else. And it's mind-numbing. And the country and the state deserve better. Listen to this. This is in the case. Here's what I mean today. This is in the Connecticut Mirror, ctmirror.org. This is how drunk Democrats have become, thinking abortion is the key to everything. And again, it's a serious issue. I understand that. And if they were serious about limiting abortions, which they're not, all these pro-choice politicians, the state, they would fund campaigns to push contraception and for responsible sex. But they don't want to because they need an issue. But listen to this. I'm going to read parts of this now. This is not from some far right-wing publication here. This is from the Connecticut Mirror, ctmirror.org. It's, if anything, it's a center-left-leaning progressive online publications. A Connecticut state representative's abortion vote is the subject of a controversial text. House Democrats say a Republican who opposed a safe harbor bill helped prosecute women for having an abortion. However, they ignored Democrats who voted the same way on the bill. Did you get that? There's a Republican rep who they think is vulnerable. They're going after her. I get it. It's politics. I know it's a down, dirty game. You don't have to tell me that. But my God, are they willing? You tell me, Democrats, 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. You proud of your own party that they're willing to throw several minority members of the Democratic caucus in Hartford, throw them figuratively under the bus to target one Republican state rep? It's mind-boggling. The text was sent out. The text reads, Carol Hall voted to help prosecute women in other states for having an abortion. And the text was put out. Now, what the Democrats have done here, too, they've set up a little bit of a firewall here. Well, we didn't really do it, sort of. But they're targeting Carol Hall here, a Republican state rep, and they say, I'm reading the text verbatim. They say Carol Hall voted to help prosecute women in other states for having an abortion, in which she did nothing of the sort, folks. She did nothing of the sort. Just the way those awful ads are targeting George Logan from National Democrats because they're scared he might beat Johanna Hayes. They have to insinuate stuff that he has said the polar opposite of on this show and on other shows. So let's get a tad deeper into this. This was a text message sent to some voters in East Hartford and Enfield, East Windsor, I'm sorry, in Enfield. It made the claim about their Republican state rep. It was sent by a political action committee controlled by the state House Democratic leadership. That's Matt Ritter and company in the state House. It refers to a vote against a law that, among other things, offers a safe harbor to abortion patients and providers against out-of-state legal claims. So the bill was set up to say, hey, we don't buy these out-of-state legal claims against women coming to Connecticut for an abortion or against abortion providers. That text that was sent out was deemed misleading by House Minority Leader Vin Candelora, a Republican, and Democratic State Rep. Geraldo Reyes of Waterbury. Geraldo Reyes leads the Black and Puerto Rican Caucus. Reyes and a dozen other Black and Puerto Rican Caucus members, 10 in the House, 3 in the Senate, also voted no on the bill because of certain reasons. The chief of which was the expansion of who could provide abortions. So you have a political action committee, which does provide a little bit of distance between state Democrats, sort of. You know, it's kind of like, well, this isn't really us doing this, wink, wink. So you have this PAC sending out this attack text, you know, insinuating that this woman, and I've never had this woman on my show, it's not in our district, State Rep. Carol Hall, saying Carol Hall voted to prosecute women in other states. How ludicrous is that? But again, when you have nothing else to campaign on, and when abortion is your elixir, if you're a Democrat for everything, what else do you expect? The bill was a combination of two measures, one that created the safe harbor and the second that allows medical providers other than doctors to perform first trimester abortions. Reyes said he and most, if not all, the members of the Black and Puerto Rican Caucus favored the out-of-state lawsuit protections, but they also, like this Republican, Ms. Hall, oppose the section that redefined who can provide abortions. Ray is saying, quote, it should be a doctor. Hall lives in Enfield, represents the 59th House District, covering parts of Enfield and East Windsor, said she was willing to vote for a narrower measure focused on the legal protections. So she, like a lot of Democrats, said, hey, we don't need to expand who can do this here. It should be a medical doctor, but I'm okay for the legal protections. But so again, this is what the Democratic Party will do now. They will smear you. And they will use the abortion issue because they simply have nothing else to do with lowering taxes, with lowering the cost of living, with making the streets safer, with rooting out corruption in government. They can't, because unless it's abortion, kids, they got nothing else.